Our next speaker, okay, the title of our next agenda item is Resources for the Visually Impaired. And someone's on their cell phone. So I'm going to wait. That's okay. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Next on our agenda is Resources for the Visually Impaired from the California Department of Education, Linda Wyatt, Special Education Consultant, Policy and Program Services Unit, Special Education Division, California Department of Education. John Paris Selb, Education. Administrator, Clearinghouse for the Specialized Media and Translation, Sacramento, California. If I can please introduce and everyone give a warm, warm welcome to our next speakers. Thank you. And I just realized. Oh,
you do have. We have one.
Okay. They do. Hello. Have a microphone. I was trying to get them one. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you. I'm Linda Wyatt, and it is my pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you. As she said, I'm a consultant in the Special Education Division of the California Department of Education, and we're going to put cart a little bit in front of the horse here. I'm going to talk about funding for assistive technology in the K-12 system, and actually the pre-K-12 system, for students with visual impairments, and John is going to talk about the assistive technology itself. So I'm going to talk about one of the things that I do as part of being a consultant at the Department of Education. The state budget each year gives CDE two pots of money that we use to serve students with low-incidence disabilities in California. Low-incidence in California includes students with visual impairments and students who are hard of hearing or deaf, or students with severe orthopedic impairments. The two pots of money that we receive, and of course this is among many, many other pots of money. I'm not saying these are the only two pots, but these are the two pots of funding that I oversee. One of them is funding for specialized equipment, books, and materials, which would include Braille materials, large print, and specialized equipment for being able to do Braille and so forth. And the other pot of money that I oversee is for specialized services. And that specialized services funding can go to pay in the K-12 system for Braille transcribers and other individuals who provide services to those students with low incidence disabilities. Last year, we received a little over $15 million in the monies for the specialized equipment, books, and materials. And every year we receive the same amount of money for the specialized services, and that is $1.7 million. For many, many years, well, actually, since it started in the late 80s, there were two distinct pots of money, so that, again, they were very clearly separated out as to what they could be used to pay for. In this year, Governor Brown's proposed budget actually put those two pots of money together, which, if they continue to be together, will give local education agencies some decision-making about how the funding will be spent. And we have given the Department of Finance some direction on that we would like to see, but whether the money remains together as one pot or will be separated out as two pots as it has been in the past, we're not sure. Maybe somebody in the Department of Ed knows, but I'm low enough down the chain that I don't know whether they will be separated out again. And again, the monies are used to pay for specialized equipment, books and materials, and specialized services. So that there is this mechanism that goes to, what happens is each year the special education local plan areas, or the SELPAs, must report to us in a report they do, they report twice a year. We only take one count, in which they tell us the number of students that they have in their SELPA that have a low incidence disability. And then we use a formula to pay for the specialized equipment that says that if you have, of course, 200 students, you're going to get a lot more money than if you have 10 students in that category. Then for specialized services, we don't do it, we do it partly by a formula, but we also give them a base amount to ensure that no matter how small they are, if they only report one student with a low incidence disability, they still get some funding for specialized services. So I just wanted to make you aware so that when you're out in your communities, it's important for you to advocate when you hear parents talking about, well, my student who has an impairment, who has a visual impairment, needs such and such, but the district is saying they don't have any money to pay for it. If an IEP team, forms the individualized education program team, if that team determines that student needs a specialized piece of equipment, books or materials, or they need specialized services, that is where this money can be spent. And you, as advocates who go out into your communities, I want to know that you're going out into your communities and you're saying to parents, I know that they receive funding for this. And by the way, even if they didn't, not having funding is not a reason for denying something in an IEP if the IEP team determines that a student needs this service or this piece of equipment. The funding that we have for the specialized equipment, books and materials, by the way, must be spent on students with IEPs, those individualized education programs, which is a document that's created by the team. The funding cannot be spent on students with disabilities who may have a 504 plan that's as a result of the 1973 Rehab Act. It must be spent on students with IEPs. So that's the first thing that I want to say to you, that again, when you go out in the community and you're advocating in the community, make certain that parents know there is this funding source available. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about is something that Joe from the Department of Rehab alluded to. He talked about the fact that individuals with disabilities needed to start preparing for adulthood, needed to start preparing for work after high school or college after high school, called a transition program or transition plan. As many of you know, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which was reauthorized in 2004, mandates transition planning for students with IEPs before their 16th birthday. And that transition plan has to be a part of their IEP. And this is for every student with an IEP. It's not just for students who may need some extra services. It's for every student, whether they're totally mainstreamed or not. They need to have a transition plan included in their IEP. And two of the important programs that go along with that transition planning are programs that are implemented through the school setting. One of them is called Workability. How many of you have heard of Workability? Okay, good. Workability is a program for students who need to have or should have skills, getting them ready for, again, after high school, employment skills, and how to prepare to go to college. What do I need to do in order to get into college if that's where I'm headed? And Workability is a good source for that. And I would love to see more students with visual impairments be involved in the Workability program because it provides a lot of readiness skills for after high school. Workability does things like teach students how to write resumes, how to interview, How do I look for a job? Where do I look for a job? Why do I want to work in the first place? And as you know, I've raised a teenager, and I know that teenagers generally don't want to work, but they do want money. And so they have to learn that the way I'm going to get money eventually is to work. And so that, and there are other things about budget preparation and so forth that goes on in the workability program. The second program that I want to tell you about is a program called Transition Partnership Programs that are funded in many school districts. And this is a cooperative program between the Department of Rehabilitation and the California Department of Education. We get initial funding through our budget that we give to Department of Rehab that they use as a match to pull down federal dollars to fund the transition partnership programs. Those programs actually provide on-job training experiences, again, experiences about interviewing, having a variety of job experiences, a variety of career explorations. And so those are two excellent programs that students with disabilities can experience that helps them when they transition out of high school. Now, in the Transition Partnership Program, they become a client of the Department of Rehab. And students that are clients can are a part of that program. Not every student in special education is going to be a part of that program. And by the way, in TPP, students with disabilities who are not a part of special education and who do not have an IEP can be a part of the TPP program because it's through Department of Rehab. For workability, they must be students with disabilities who have an IEP. And so again, when you go out into your communities, the thing I'm really saying to you is please go out and advocate with parents that they ensure that the parents know about these programs, that the opportunities are there, and to see if their teenagers might benefit from these programs. I think it's very important, and I would like to see more students with visual impairments. And I'm looking at just to make sure that I'm not going over. The third thing I wanted to talk about has to do with credentialing of teachers for students with visual impairments. You know, in California, there are two universities that fund credentialing programs. One is Cal State LA. The other is San Francisco State. Both of those universities offer programs for individuals who want to be teachers of the visually impaired and also who want to become O&M specialists, orientation and mobility specialists. And those programs are always looking for individuals who want to get into those credentialing programs. There's never enough teachers to serve students with visual impairments who have the appropriate credentials. So get out and see if you can find individuals, maybe present teachers, teachers in the general education program who might have an interest in getting into the credentialing program to eventually work into becoming teachers of the visually impaired. I'm saying this because I'm concerned as I look across the state that perhaps we're beginning to lose our numbers of teachers of the visually impaired for lots of reasons. And so I just think we need to keep saying over and over and searching, do you want to become a teacher of the visually impaired? These programs are available. And sometimes they'll have stipends where they can give some assistance with tuition and so forth to these individuals who are working on these credentialed programs. So, again, if you have an interest or if you know somebody who might have an interest, these two universities are always looking for individuals to join their program to get these credentials. So having said that, I'm going to turn it over to John. When John is finished, we're going to take questions at that point in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. I also want to thank Jean, who pestered both Linda and myself to come to this conference, and we are very glad that he is persistent. And just for your information, the information I'm going to present, I sent electronically to Jean. So, Jean, if you have a way of dispersing the information. That would be really helpful, so perhaps there's a way to do that. Okay, I'm with the Department of Education, and there is going to be a huge paradigm shift in education for those of you who know of people who are in schools these days. You've probably heard the advent of this thing called an iPad. Well, it seems like everybody and their mother wants an iPad, and it's going to do everything and to include sliced bread for you. Well, that would all be great, but it doesn't do everything for everyone. We are entering a digital age, though. And so I want to rest any worries or myths or bad information that's getting out there. Braille is not going away. In fact, thanks to the efforts of the Braille Institute, who started the Braille Challenge several years ago, Braille is actually becoming a really cool thing to not only be able to read, but be able to read quickly. And so there are competitions annually all over the place. There are regional competitions, state competitions, and national competitions. The other thing that has really happened recently is all of these tablets, including the iPad, the Nook, the Kindle, and quite a few other devices now accept refreshable displays. So you don't have to lug around all the Braille, particularly when I was looking today. If you're an eighth grader and taking an average load of the eighth grade curriculum, I was looking at my warehouse just before I came here, that's over 100 volumes of Braille. It takes a small truck to cart that away. And if you happen to bring home the volume that was not the right one, or you needed the atlas that was in the other volume, it's quite a lot to have to keep track of. And so now all of that curricula is on and available digitally. So you can load that to a Braille note. You can load it to all kinds of new devices that are being issued out every year. And all those are accessible with a refreshable display. And I believe APH is currently working on a full page display for Braille, which is going to be a real help, too, for those of you who are speed readers and the refreshable Brailles just aren't fast enough. The other issue that has not been fixed yet is a refreshable tactile display. You can get a lot of information from text, but you can't get all the information that sighted folks have by looking at visuals, whether they're science, mathematics, geographic. There's a lot of information that comes to people who can see the text that is not readily available. And to make a tactile takes a lot of skill and a lot of time. So we're looking forward to the day when that is a doable thing, so that you not only have a refreshable Braille display, but a refreshable tactile display. There are some good things coming out of Japan and actually out of Utah that are looking into refreshable displays. There's currently a refreshable screen for a couple of the devices that raise kind of a keyboard that will give you the basic keyboarding skill with Braille on each of those keys, but it's still in developmental stage. It's really not on the market as a usable thing, but everything is changing, and a lot of the really wonderful devices that are available now look really cool. And so a lot of the kids that are in school, as young as they're even starting Braille notes as young as third grade. But there are the other devices like the BookPort Plus, the BookPort Refreshable, the DT, and all kinds of other things are small and very cool. So the kids that have the need for Braille, they can actively participate in everything because all the information is at their fingertips. Most of these displays now are internet accessible, so they can get not only their email and their Facebook status, of course, but they can also access the internet for information, and they can be as strong in research as the kids that are able to see the screens. And so things are far more accessible. Still, the iPad is the only one that has a touch display with VoiceOver, so we're looking for other tablets to join them. Just want to let you know that curriculum has greatly changed too. As of 2010, the entire country, except for three renegade states, have adopted what's called the Common Core State Standards. So you can go to any state across the country and you'll know what the reading standards are for each grade and each area within that curricular for reading, language arts, and mathematics. The state of Maryland has now taken all of those standards and created Braille standards. Now, California has had Braille standards for math and language arts since the last adoptions, but these new Common Core standards have only been in place for 2 years, and already Maryland has adapted all of those for Common Core. The new beginning reading program, which used to be called Patterns, has been totally redone by the American Printing House for the Blind, and it's now called, Building on Patterns, right. And so that is available kindergarten through third grade. That includes not only Braille literacy, but reading and decoding and beginning comprehension strategies as well. They're also redoing that program to be aligned with a Common Core and to align with all the products that the American Printing House for the Blind puts out so that kids have manipulatives available to that. Just want to give you an update on what the state is doing in terms of how we're getting Braille and large print out to the students. Just give you a couple of year statistics. In large print in 2011, we sent out large print to over 9,072 individual titles to students just in California. 2012, a slight decrease, 9,013. And we see that a little bit of a change because students are now accessing this large print instead going to a digital form to a small screen device like a computer, laptop, or a small screen like a cell phone. I can't believe people can actually see things on a cell phone because I can't. But Braille has picked up. In 2011, we had 1,415 titles sent out in Braille. And last year, in 2012, 1,526 individual titles sent out in Braille. That's a lot of Braille. That does not include most of the kids who are accessing this Braille. They have the Braille at home or at school, and they have a digital copy of that same curricula so they can carry it in their back pocket. Downloads is where the things get changed, and you're going to see a huge change there. The state has provided all curriculum kindergarten through eighth grade in a digital format. I'm also able to get a lot of high school files as well. But that's changed from 22,494 files downloaded in 2011 to a whopping 3,461, over 1,000 more downloads of the curriculum in Braille files, Braille tactiles, and other formats. So the students are really catching on to this digital craze that all their peers are starting to get involved with as well. So we see that as a trend. It does not mean Braille, hard copy Braille, will ever go away. It just means that the kids now have the flexibility of reading the Braille either at home or in class and having the digital version at their disposal, which is really a nice thing of having instead of having to carry that stuff around with them all the time. We also monitor the federal grants from the federal quota program. And California is always the largest group of students who are legally blind in the country. We account for 12% of all students who are legally registered. And in the count in 2012, because 2013 isn't complete yet, we had 4,962 students that are in public schools and 611 in private schools. So that's 5,700 students that are legally blind in California, and that's out of about 60,000 students nationwide. So we are constantly keeping up on that, constantly trying to find where those students are to make sure that they are getting accessible materials, and as Linda pointed out, teachers to help them with this. A lot of kids that we work with, remember, California is one of those weird districts. It's a very long, skinny state. We have over 1,000 school districts, and that does not include the over 800 individual charter schools. So it's a giant situation educationally for any state to have to deal with. Some of our more rural cases, there is only one student that is legally blind or visually impaired in the entire county, and they may never have had a student there before. Fortunately, we have some support for teachers. We have a wonderful list service of over 1,000 individuals that are connected, that share materials, share advice, and share information. I try to send out things on our Braille and Teach list service that I think is appropriate, and I try to do that as regularly as possible. Sometimes I inundate people, but anything that new comes about, whether it's a story of an individual who has created some new device or a student who has made an amazing accomplishment, I try to get those stories out, as well as advancements in technology, as well as just general information, so that people can access. Giving information, I think, is really important. We do an awful lot of materials from the American Printing House from the Blind. We get about $2 million a year just for that purpose. And we get a lot of assistive technology. That's where more of the money is being spent these days. And again, because if you only have one or two students, you can't afford these things. And like Linda spoke earlier, there's kind of a base amount. So if there's a need for a student who's moved in, or for some reason there has been a fire, or some reason information or tools and devices have been destroyed, they simply pick up the phone or email me, and we make sure that those students have the available, whether it's Braille paper, assistive technology, or whatever it is that we can do to provide for them so that they can keep up with their education. It's really important to us to do that. We do have an awful lot of other services and materials that are available that we provide through the California Department of Education, and those are in the brochure that I have made available, so you will get a copy of all of that if you're interested. Again, our biggest point is in advocacy, and it's very important that you know of what's going on with our young folks that are coming up in schools with either visual impairments or are blind. I had a chance last month to meet quite a few of them at the California Transcribers and Educators of the Blind and Visually Impaired Conference that was in Burlingame. And these students are absolutely amazing. I have no idea where their careers are going to take them, but they absolutely do not see any bounds. They are absolutely independent, and they are so confident. It's amazing to see students coming out of a system that has many, many challenges, and they are such great mentors to their peers, such advocates for themselves, and such a great future. And so I'm really enthused about what is going on in our education system, but it's not system-wide. So if you know of situations of students that are needing more support than they're currently getting, please make sure that people know about that, whether it's me or their school district, or somebody who has some attachment to the education system, because we want to make sure that the services and materials that are going to help them advance and become independent are available to them. And at this point, we're going to open it up to questions. If anybody has anything to say or anything that they have burning questions, and I believe there'll be microphones coming around so that we can answer those, and we'll make up answers as quickly as you ask them.
So if folks who have questions could please stand up.
Oh gosh, there's
and our volunteers will get a mic to you. And identify yourself by name before asking your question. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Richard Retha, Junior Blind. I have a question each, Donna, if you don't mind, for Linda and John. Linda, can you talk to us more about or give more information about the Transition Partnership TPP program and the Workability programs? Do we know how well those programs are serving blind teenagers, if they're serving them adequately? Is there a report card annually? When I was a counselor at rehab, I had the most trouble with getting TPP programs and workability programs to work with the most significantly disabled. So I'm wondering if there's any way of checking on that with your MOU with DOR. And then for John, could you tell us about I think there's a program for entering freshmen who get $3,000 towards technology that they can use for high school? And thank you.
Okay, to answer your question about how well TPP and Workability are doing with serving significantly disabled students, what I can do, I don't have the information with me today, but what I can do is I can get numbers of students and breakdowns of disabilities. We have access to that kind of information, and I can give it I can put it in a report and send it to Gene, who can send it out, if he wouldn't mind, Gene. Okay. Richard, would that be helpful to you? Okay.
What Richard was talking about, that $3,000, it's kind of a lure. We have an awful lot of kids who are not completing high school, and I wanted to make sure that they have access to an awful lot of technology and materials and services while they're in school. But when you leave high school, very often, unless you know how to connect yourselves with the Department of Rehab, you're on your own. Your family is the only support that you have. And so I decided to start this program. It's been going on for 5 years now. It's called the Ninth Grade Toolkit. During their ninth grade, the students in ninth grade sit in on their IEP meeting, determine what tools they want, non-consumable tools, that they would like to learn how to use, how to maintain, and then there's kind of a contract with them. Either they're going to complete the general education for high school, or they're going to complete a certificate course in high school. And at the end of that time, they get to keep all of those tools. So it's $3,000. And that's just free. So it's giving them the tools they know how to use, and they get to take that either for work programs, college programs, or for independent living. Thanks for bringing that up, Richard.
I was concerned, John, regarding your comments about putting Nooks and Kindles into the hands of blind students. As president of the American Council of the Blind, I was involved several years ago, I think it's probably five now, four, joining with the other national consumer advocacy organization in taking action against Arizona State University, which was using inaccessible technology for one of its classes. And out of that, we got a letter that the Department of Justice disseminated around the country to all universities saying that if that university or if a university chose to purchase such equipment or expect their students to have such equipment, and it wasn't fully accessible to blind and visually impaired students, they were violating the law. When I first heard, probably 5 years ago, that the Department of Education in California was considering putting Kindles and Nooks into the hands of students, I had some very serious concerns about it. Regardless of what they tell us, we know that those devices are not yet fully accessible. And until and unless those devices are fully accessible, blind and visually impaired students are at a significant disadvantage in the classroom, and just making sure they have Braille notes or Braille senses doesn't solve your problem. If all of the functions of those devices are not available to a blind student, then they are at a disadvantage. And I would hope that before you go too much further with this program, that you will recognize that there are accessibility issues. I suspect they will be resolved within a couple of years, but the problems still exist, and you're running some risk of getting unwanted attention from the Department of Justice with our assistance if you persist in providing inaccessible equipment, Braille senses and Braille notes notwithstanding, to these students.
I actually agree with you, absolutely, and I applaud your being part of that lawsuit that was brought. And as far as I know, you're absolutely correct. The iPad is the only one that has accessible features, and the other two are still lagging behind. Maybe I misstated. I'm just saying a lot of schools are purchasing Nooks and Kindles inappropriately because they do not work with students with visual impairments, and they are not adequate at all. And even if they have the tablets, you still have students that do not have access to the tactiles and graphics, and that, again, is an unfair disadvantage. The Department of Education actually isn't buying any of that stuff for them. We don't have any money. But individual schools are writing grants for foundations and for other people to buy them these digital tablets, and a lot of things are moving to the digital move, and so I think school districts are taking a look at what can they do, and some of them are getting on board with the iPads. But again, as I say, it's really important for us to continue to advocate for the students who need the tactile representations for those pieces of the education that they cannot see and or are not scribed to them. Because another thing, there's an organization called Bookshare who is providing an awful lot of Braille files. A lot of teachers who are misinformed because they are not teachers of the visually impaired are not aware that those files are not formatted, do not carry any descriptions, and do not carry any tactiles. So to hand a student a BRF file of a textbook is inadequate, and those files need to be worked on by a transcriber who can add the captions, add the tactiles, to make sure that the student is getting access to all of the information for the curriculum. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thanks for the clarification. Far be it for me to speak for the, or to put words in the mouth of the CCB president. But if, you know, I think that if we hear about districts that take such action, then we have a responsibility to find ourselves some attorneys that want to proceed with this, because we can't allow this to happen.
One of the things I'd like to add, if I could, when I spoke about the money that districts use to pay for assistive technology, sometimes they will misspeak and say, well, that money cannot be used to purchase an iPad. It can be used to purchase an iPad if that's the only tool that will allow that student the access it needs to be able to do whatever the student needs to do. When we're talking about using the funds that we have, I'd say there isn't anything around that we would say that funding should be used to purchase that particular thing for every student. When we individualized education programs are just that, each student's needs need to be looked at individually. And if an iPad is what will meet the need of that student, that funding can certainly be used to purchase an iPad. So if you out in your community hear somebody saying, well, you know, the low incidence funding can't be used to purchase an iPad, please call me, because that isn't true. But conversely, that funding cannot be used to purchase an iPad for everybody, because, again, it's to be looked at on an individualized basis. Nor can that money be used to supplant anything either. If a district is going to purchase an iPad for students and they call me and say, well, you know, we're going to purchase it for every student, but we'd like for you to pay for the iPads for the students with disabilities, I say no. That's supplanting. That money is not, it's to be supplemental, and it is not to supplant. So if you're going to purchase an iPad for every student, all students means all students. And I will not allow you to do that.
Okay, this is Michael Thomas. I'm with Disability Rights California. I was going to make one comment, but now it's going to be two. And they're not questions, so you know, you're going to have to come up with an answer. The first one I was going to make was to as far as what Linda was talking about with the workability program and with TPP. Basically, I work for Disability Rights California, and I'm in the client assistance program. And some of you guys may know what the CAP program is. It pretty much makes sure that individual rights are protected when they're getting service from the Department of Rehab. And we are really trying to work with transition age students to make sure that they go through the TTP program and make sure the workability is working for them. So if you're having any problems with that, you can always contact the Client Assistance Program. Disability Rights California now has the CAP program throughout the whole state of California. So you could call Disability Rights California in your area, and you could get the CAP advocate, which would help help in as far as the legal rights, not only for transition age youth, but for any individual getting services from the Department of Rehabilitation, okay? That was my first comment to let you guys know that the Client Assistance Program is there, and we really, as Linda said, we really try to work with transition age students because, as we said earlier, we want to make sure, you know, our kids get the services they need, not after, you know, 3 years after they need it. We want them to get it before, and we at the Client Assistance Program is basically there to make sure, and I just got this thing for blind and visually impaired youth. I don't know why, but, you know, that's my area. So I'm like Linda. I want to see more of our youth get the services they need. The second comment was to pretty much inform Mitch, and Donna already knows that if, and then just to let you guys know, Disability Rights California, we do have attorneys who take actions. And there's an attorney in our office, he does discrimination. And if these, if they're violating, if the school districts are buying these things and they're not totally accessible, Sean would love, he's begging for cases in the sensory disability area. So if that's happening or any other type of discrimination is happening, please call Disability Rights California because Sean wants to take cases for the deaf and hard of hearing community and the blind and visually impaired. Okay?
Thank you very, very much. We serve together on the Blind Advisory Committee, and this man is great. So remember, he is your CAP advocate, and you know, thank you so much. I am so happy. He got to know a bunch of us at the BAC, and he still came to our convention. So we'll get him yet. Any other questions? Okay, we have one more.
Hi, this is Veronica, or Gigi DeMarie. And this question and comment is to you, Linda. Earlier in your program, you mentioned that there was 16 point something million allocated for equipment and then 1.7 for service, and that the governor, if I understood this right, lumped that together. And so I'm wondering how that works and how funds are allocated. And actually, when he put that together, did it equal the 17 point whatever?
It equaled it, and let me, this is a disclaimer. I work for the Department of Rehab, and as a state agency, I can't take,
Department of Education,
I'm sorry, I wish. I can't advocate one way or the other. I'm just telling you the facts, okay? But the facts as they are they had put the funding together. It did equal the same amount of money, but I guess I can say this because I'm on the road to retirement. and I may be retiring faster sooner than I had originally planned, but I have a problem with it put together.
I do too. It
because I want to make sure that the funding is spent for students as much as possible. If it's put together, it might not happen that way.
Yes.
So I would say, I'm not telling you to have a concern about it, but I would say if you do have a concern about it, you might call your legislator and ask if it's been separated out or if it continues to be together, and perhaps give them your thoughts on it. And again, I'm not telling you what your thoughts are, but anyway, that it does equal the same amount of money. But and again, they may have been separated out by now, but I haven't heard that they have been.
So in the services, are there the same amount of administrators to provide the services?
The funding is spent on a local level, so I don't know how many I'm talking about administrators, or rather the administrators that are in the districts, and so I can't tell you the number of administrators in the district, because the funding is, we send it to local level, and that's where the administrators and the SELPAs make some decisions on it.
Thank you. It does seem to be a point to be concerned about. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for coming today to speak to us. We have enjoyed having you at our conference and convention, and safe travels. Thank you so much.